Now, Dr. Knuth, you really first started getting interested in UFOs because of one of your professors in college and the stories that they would tell you about UFO incursions at nuclear plants in Montana.
I heard about that in 1988 when I started graduate school at Montana State University. One of our physics professors told us about the fact that at Malmstrom Air Force Base in northern Montana, they were having problems, present tense, with UFO incursions on the ICBM missile sites where they were shutting down ICBM missiles. So I heard that from a physics professor. And later learned, 30 years later, learned that Robert Salas was at Malmstrom Air Force Base, the same base, in 1967. 66 and 67, and they were having problems then, the same types of problems.
I am here to discuss the so-called flying saucers.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's.
Did the CIA write Wind of Change by the Scorpions?
As humans busied themselves about the various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied.
Dr. Loeb, what percentage chance do you give it that you have indeed uncovered extraterrestrial or non-human technology?
With infinite complacence, people went about their affairs, yet across an immense ethereal gulf, intellects vast and unsympathetic drew their plans against us.
Prior to your abduction, did you believe in UFOs or any sort of alien life form?
All things unexplained.
So some of that, I think, sir, we'll save for closed session.
Hello, all you unexplained ones, and welcome back to All Things Unexplained. My name is Dr. Mounce. I'm an author, a narrator, a professor, and a podcaster. Shout out to Smitty and CJ who could not join us. And I also want to give a special shout out to everybody in the chat right now. Thank you so much for joining us early. You can all help us by hitting that subscribe button down below, by making sure to comment on this video, making sure to hit the like button, and please make sure to share this video. When you do that, it really helps us defeat the evil algorithms that are trying to prevent disclosure. So again, shout out to all the listeners in the chat, everybody watching the video. You're here to see special guest Kevin Knuth, a renowned physicist and researcher. You might recognize him from his appearance on television shows like Encounters and A Tear in the Sky, where he explored mysteries beyond our understanding. Dr. Knuth is also a key figure in UAPX, the organization dedicated to unraveling the secrets of unidentified aerial phenomenon. Everybody, please welcome Professor Kevin Knuth to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was lucky enough to recently take a trip out to Roswell, New Mexico. And I have to say, before I went, I didn't really know why I was going. I had no plans. I had nothing set in stone. And I got out there, and the next thing you know, I ended up at the actual Roswell UFO crash site. So here I am. It's like a scene out of Breaking Bad. I'm taking my rental car 2 hours out into the desert. No cell phone service. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, a lot of things could go bad out here right now. But it was fantastic. We went way off-road into the crash site. And we had a metal detector, which I got to use, which was incredible. And we actually found some anomalous things. I found something, and some of the people I was with found some things that I can only describe as little rectangular anomalous pieces of metal. That's the best way I know how to describe them. And another thing that really bothers me about how they frame all of these situations like the Roswell encounter, we are constantly bombarded with the notion that our military is the best and the brightest, and I believe that. I believe they are the best and the brightest, the most capable military force in the history of the world. But when it comes to UFOs, they're treated like Keystone Cops. And I just think that is so disrespectful.
Yeah, it's a disservice to our military. It's irresponsible when you consider our military pilots who aren't being told what's actually in our skies. And it's disrespectful to all the experiencers, all the people who have actually seen these things and encountered these things. We've been laughing at them for 80 years, and that's not right. They've been seeing things, and they have information. And scientists haven't been paying attention. The U.S. government pretends it doesn't happen, and I think that's really a problem.
That is so frustrating to me, because Arrow will tell you things like, there's no data. But I'm here to tell you, that's data, okay? Witness accounts, witness testimony, that is data. That is qualitative data. You know, it doesn't all have to be quantitative, that is mathematical data. Qualitative witness accounts data is just as valid as mathematical data. All right, it is now time for our Area 51 Coffee Company Hot Takes segment. This is brought to you by Area 51 Coffee Company. Get yours at area51coffeeco.com. This hot take involves a scientist by the name of Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger, based in Switzerland. She actually went on a podcast recently and had some very intriguing things to say about experiments going on at CERN, C-E-R-N, CERN.
Radionuclear research. But it is more than that, because there are lots of physicians, I know some, they're doing very strange experimentation. There are beings from portals coming in and out. It's physicists from the CERN who told me this.
They've testified to beings coming in and out of portals.
Yes. They have, apparently, in the bottom of the CERN, this portal, this door, where they are dealing with all the subatomic dimensions. They say there are 17 different dimensions of reality. That's what those physicists say. Some others say there are more dimensions, you know. And now, when you look at what is going on in the CERN, there is a fight from some of the military agencies, intel. They say that there is a fight on time. They're trying to change time.
What's my hot take on it? Well, these things are hard. I've not heard about anything like this. Again, I'm going to be that skeptical scientist. I'm skeptical till I see some evidence. And if I'm going to hold that standard for all the work I do, and I'm going to hold that same standard for Arrow, I'm going to have to hold it for this scientist as well. We need to see some evidence that this is happening. It's hard to imagine, but a lot of these things are hard to imagine, and that doesn't mean it's not true. So that's... The way I typically handle it is I treat it as interesting, and I file it away in a place where it's accessible in my mind, so that if I see something else that is commensurate with that or supports that or anything, I can then pull that back and say, oh, yes, and this is like what Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger was talking about CERN, and then I will then look at it further. But I'll make a mental note of it, and I think that's that's how I typically handle these things. But I'd like to see some evidence. I'd love to see some evidence. That would be fantastic.
And Dr. Knuth, I've had this thought experiment with some other people. What if one of your dearest, most respected friends came to you and said, I've been abducted by aliens, or I was told that beings are coming through a portal at CERN, or some other anomalous experience? What would you think about that?
Well, I mean, I don't disbelieve them again, but I am skeptical. So I would just make a mental note of it, and especially if it's a friend I trust, and if they had personal experience with it, I would, you know, of course, I'd hold that in higher regard. But I don't just disbelieve people. I think that's silly too. You don't believe people and disbelieve people based on whether what they say makes sense to you. That's not how it works. We spend all day long. We spend all day long listening to anecdotes from people and believing them all day, and don't have any problems with it. But when it's a little weird, we then all of a sudden, well, you can't believe what people tell you. Well, I mean, you do all day long, and you couldn't function if you didn't. And so I think it's important to listen to people, and it's important to take note of that.
And speaking of weird and mind-bending, it's my understanding that you have watched some of the episodes of Three Body Problem on Netflix. What's your hot take on Three Body Problem?
I have. I've read about half of the first book, and I've watched about half of the episodes, so that I think I'm about in the same place in both. Oh, I'm loving it. It's great fun. Yeah, it's an excellent story. There's a lot that I like about it. It's a good thinking story and a lot to think about. And especially, you know, I don't want to say any spoilers, but there's a lot to think about in watching the story. And there's, you know, and a good story makes you think about yourself as much as that you are thinking about other things. I'm trying to think if there's a way to say something without having a spoiler. The fact that we humans have so much trouble getting along with each other makes it and are basically almost irredeemable in some sense, makes it incredibly difficult for others to trust us as well. We have a lot of problems. And that really comes through in this story. In fact, so far what I've seen is it's more about us than it is about anybody else.
Now back to the error report, and we're going to take a look at the error report errors in part. This is from Hanks of The Debrief, March 14th, 2024. And right off the bat, you know, they say the late Senator Harry Reid was from New Mexico when in fact he was actually from Nevada. This is just mind-blowingly sloppy, in my opinion. Dr. Knuth, I feel like you would actually take away points if one of your students had this in a paper.
Yeah, you hit a number of them there. I see you've got a good number of them there. That's right. Yeah, well, I mean, the first two errors you have especially are especially mind-blowing. You don't get the state that a senator's from right? Really? In a federal report? Really? How do you pull that off and keep your job? I don't know. It shows that it's sloppy. It's poorly done. You can't even get the simple stuff right. You can Google Harry Reid and find out that he's from Nevada. You can Kenneth Arnold sighting. I checked on Wikipedia. They have the correct date on Wikipedia. What he said June 23rd in the Arrow report. Go to Wikipedia. It's June 24th, and then you can verify that it is June 24th. An eighth grader would have gotten it right. So how can you hold anything to high regard when you have mistakes like this? I've been a scientific journal editor for 12 years now, actually, I think 13. If I saw a scientific paper that had these mistakes in it, I'd reject it flat out. It would be rejected. And that's really pretty ironic, considering that the Arrow report actually states that there have been no academic suggestions that these things are extraterrestrial or non-human. And when that's entirely wrong, because I did that in my paper, and that was peer-reviewed scientific paper. And so it's ironic that they're holding, you know, scientific standards to such high regard and academic standards to such high regard, but this report doesn't even meet those standards, doesn't come anywhere near.
And some of the other reports, they had the wrong date for the 1947 Kenneth Arnold sighting. They seem to confuse Project Bear with Project Stork. They even reported and seemed to misconstrue the percentage of quality sightings that remain unexplained. They referred to the former director of Project Blue Book, Tuskegee Airman Lieutenant Colonel Robert Jones Friend. They referred to him as Roger J. Friend. They appear to have reprinted findings of past UAP studies, some of which themselves had inaccurate findings, such as the Condon Committee.
So you know what's going to happen? You know, this is an opportunity, actually, in some ways. Because what's going to happen is that some of us from the academic community who have been studying UFOs now for several years are going to write our own reports, correct these mistakes, and provide much more information, correct information. This is going to get corrected and corrected by the people who've been studying this. And so I see this. So rather than being depressed about this, I see this as an opportunity.
Is that a teaser that you just gave
us? I'm sorry. Yeah. It's a bit of a teaser. Yep. Yeah. I'll contribute to some degree. I don't have time to do a whole report like this. I wish the Pentagon would have paid me to do it. I might have done a much better job. I'd have at least gotten the first two right. And you're going to see it come from multiple groups. Multiple groups are going to do this, and some are going to work together. Some are going to do it separately, but that's what's going to happen. And I think that's going to be a positive thing that comes out of this. The first two mistakes right there show you can't trust any of it. That's what basically says. I tell my students this all the time when they're presenting scientific talks. I said, you make any mistake in your slides, and then nobody's going to believe anything that's in your report. There's no reason to believe it, because if you can't get a simple thing right, you certainly can't get a complicated thing right. And so the error report is really useless and really pointless. And it's in some ways, I'm also grateful because it allows us to say that, and it's showing its true colors blatantly, which is a good thing. We know that they didn't do their job. I mean, Kirkpatrick didn't write this himself, but he did sign off on it. And I'm sorry, when you're a co-author, you need to read the report and you need to perform due diligence and make sure that it's done correctly. And he didn't. I don't think his heart was in this job at all. I don't think that he was interested in it at all. You know, very much like what happened with the Condon Committee, where they did a half beat job on it as well, where, you know, they couldn't explain, you know, a large percentage, well, large, I mean, more than 5% of the cases, and then said, well, there's nothing to see here. I mean, clearly they're not doing their jobs there. And this is standard, and this is what's been going on for 80 years. And this has been the trick that's been used, is that you just have to have some official report that says that it's nonsense, and then half the people believe that it's nonsense. And that's how it works. But it's been used over and over, and this you can go through the Condon report and find all sorts of problems with that too. And it's ridiculous. It doesn't take a lot of work to cover this up, because most people don't want to believe it in the first place. And so all you got to do is plant a seed of doubt, and an official report is enough doubt to just throw everybody off.
And there's a tendency in the Arrow paper to pull the data, it seems, that supports the Arrow position and leave out the data that might argue against it. This comes from someone you might know named Robert Powell of the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies.
Right. So I'm glad you mentioned Robert Powell, because he's with the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies. I loved his assessment of this, by the way. I thought it was dead on. Robert's a good guy, and he knows what he's doing. And in fact, the one thing that is barely touched on in this report, I don't even know if it's mentioned, I didn't see it, are the incursions at nuclear weapon sites and nuclear facilities. Nothing. That's a national security issue that somebody ought to be saying something about. Now, if you go to the SCU website, so this is the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, they put out a paper, Ian Porritt, Larry Hancock, and Sean Grossner put out a paper called UAP Pattern Recognition Study, 1945 to 1975, U.S. Military Atomic Warfare Complex, where they basically, I'll read the first sentence, they provides a view of the pattern of reported unidentified aerospace phenomena in the United States associated with the military atomics weapons complex between 1945 and 1975. So they published this paper last year. It's 63 pages long. 63 pages long. How long is the Arrow report? So they're both 63 pages long. That's interesting. That's surprising. Interesting coincidence. So you've got, on one hand, you've got the SCU put out a paper on UFO incursions at nuclear weapon sites that's 63 pages long, the same length as the entire Arrow report, which is supposed to cover the whole history, volume one of the history, right? What's wrong with this picture? The Arrow report is again lacking, severely lacking.
The sense that what's really happening here is what Colonel Moultrie said at one of the first UFO hearings before Congress, which is this.
So some of that, I think, sir, we'll save for closed session.
Now, Dr. Knuth, you told us the first time you were on the show that you really first started getting interested in UFOs because of one of your professors in college and the stories that they would tell you about UFO incursions at nuclear plants in Montana.
I heard about that in 1988 when I started graduate school at Montana State University. One of our physics professors told us about the fact that at Malmstrom Air Force Base in northern Montana, they were having problems, present tense, with UFO incursions on the ICBM missile sites where they were shutting down ICBM missiles. So I heard about that from a physics professor. And later learned, 30 years later, learned that Robert Salas was at Malmstrom Air Force Base, the same base, in 1967, 66 and 67, and they were having problems then, the same types of problems. I also later learned, just last year learned, went down to visit our family in for Mardi Gras in Louisiana, and learned that from my wife's uncle Matt, had been stationed at Malmstrom in the early 70s, and he knew all about the UFO incursions shutting down ICBM missile sites. So this, in some sense, this is common knowledge among certain groups of people, but not important enough for the Arrow report. There's something wrong here. There's a big thing. There's some big things wrong here, and you really can't help but worry.
Again, it appears that the Arrow report simply cherry-picked studies and the data that supported their conclusions. And they, meanwhile, ignored other groundbreaking studies on the subject, such as a study that might sound very familiar to you, Dr. Knuth, estimating flight characteristics of anomalous, unidentified aerial vehicles, which unveiled shocking physics. This, of course, is your paper, along with a couple of co-authors. And among the shocking physics it talks about is the fact that these Tic Tacs in the Nimitz encounter were estimated to be traveling at 45,000 miles per hour, which would make them more than capable of interstellar travel.
Now, this leads to another problem with the Arrow report and with Arrow altogether. Is that I published this paper, and Robert Powell and Peter Rialli are co-authors. They're both from the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies. We published this paper, and last February, briefed Arrow, our UAPX team briefed Arrow, and they knew of this paper. They had a copy of it. They knew about it, and this was actually on one of our slides. He then had... was questioned by Senator Gillibrand the next, would that have been March of last year, as to whether there had been any academic peer-reviewed papers published suggesting that these things were extraterrestrial, and he said no. In fact, it says that in the Arrow report, he says that in the beginning of one of the sections. Let me find this. This is section 2, I believe, on page 13, or no, section 2, page 7. Section 2. So we can go to page 7, section 2. Executive summary. Arrow found no evidence that any USG investigation, academic-sponsored research, that's my paper, or official panel review has confirmed any sighting of a UAP-represented extraterrestrial technology. So they are denying the existence of this paper, which is problematic because, heck, the Israelis know about this paper. So here's so I can point you to the report written by Frank Milburn titled The Pentagon's UAP Task Force, written for BISA, which is the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies at Bar-Ilan University. Israel. And in this paper, they talk about, they actually quote my paper. And I will read the paragraph. I'll read the paragraph from my paper in this, is in the Israeli report, to highlight the fact that the Israelis know this and have discussed it. So they say, one scientific study, quote, estimating flight characteristics for anomalous unidentified aerial vehicles notes, and this is what I said in the paper, estimated accelerations range from almost 100 G to thousands of G's with no observed air disturbance, no sonic booms, and no evidence of excessive heat commensurate with even the minimal estimated energies. In many cases, the number and quality of witnesses and the equipment used to track and record the craft favor the latter hypothesis that these are indeed technologically advanced craft. The observed flight characteristics are consistent with the flight characteristics required for interstellar travel. If these observed accelerations were sustainable in space, then these craft could easily reach relativistic speeds within a matter of minutes to hours and cover interstellar distances in a matter of days to weeks, proper time. So that is a quote from my paper, a peer-reviewed scientific paper that assesses UAP speeds. That was quoted in an Israeli military think tank report. But Arrow makes no mention of this, and in fact states that no papers of such type exist.
And I find that so frustrating, because your academic paper is a clear, definitive scientific repudiation that these phenomena have all prosaic explanations. Meanwhile, the Arrow report says these phenomena do have all prosaic explanations, and then even says, hey, there are no scientific papers to the contrary.
And the Arrow report denies that that paper exists, explicitly states that it doesn't. We have another big problem. And in fact, what the Arrow report also doesn't cover is the talk given by Hermann Oberth. Hermann Oberth is a rocketry pioneer. He was mentor to Wernher von Braun. In 1954, Hermann Oberth gave a talk on flying saucers. And in that talk, he notes that they had been tracked on radar, reaching speeds up to 19 kilometers a second, which is about 42,000 miles an hour, which is not that different than what I'm computing here. That was noted by Hermann Oberth in 1954, public talk. And he then goes on to state that had it just been one or two radar observations, he would hold off until more data were collected before believing that, but he had seen up to or at least 50 radar observations of UAP that support that fact. So this was well known by some people in 1954 that these things were traveling at spacecraft speeds, 40,000 miles an hour. That's the speed of the New Horizons probe that passed Pluto and is currently in the outer solar system. The space shuttle and space station only go like 17,000 miles an hour, only half of that. So UAPs have been tracked going faster than our space station, and noted by Hermann Oberth in 1954 with over 50 radar observations. Why aren't any of these in the Arrow report? Why is this not noted? 1954. Do you know what the airspeed record was in 1954? I don't know the exact number. It's around 700 miles an hour. Certainly not 40,000 miles an hour. Give me a break. This is it's obvious what's going on, and this is a whitewash. It's ridiculous. I think you just got my reaction.
Okay, I think this would be a great time to get your reaction to an interview that Dr. Kirkpatrick did soon after his exit from Arrow, in which he addressed the fact that the Nimitz encounter with the Tic Tacs was not in the Arrow report. Let's have a listen.
To be continued.
Thanks. Like. Share. Follow. Comment. Subscribe. Support. What's your hot take on Travis Taylor?
I've got an exclusive for you guys if you want it about the Alaska.
We do.
Okay.
More at BigfootUFO.com.
All things unexplained.
So some of that I think, sir, we'll save for close session.